This is the Vosto Show. Right, I was supposed to actually create an intro for my show these days, but I had no time to do that. So, but I had time for a lot of stupid shit, though, like playing video games on the computorium. Okay, like right now, there is Rackmeister, the greatest hacker of all time, on Bob's Backyard chat room. I will say hi, Rackmeister. He's just talking some stupid crap, like always. I have 3 listeners or something. Let me check. So, what should we start with today? You know, McDonald's sucks. It's shit. It's like you get this small piece of crap in your hand. You know, it's little hamburger with some little cheese inside the small loaf of bread. You know, and it sucks. Why do people go there? I don't know. Which is why the hackers, okay, the official McDonald's, Austria, Taiwan, and Korea got hacked. Over 200,000 credentials leaked. Turkish Ajan hacker group member Maxni has been at it again this time, taking sites to fast food giant McDonald's again. Maxni and another hacker using the handle XM3HM3DX have breached the official sites for Austria, Taiwan, and as a result, over 200,000 credentials from various parts of the sites have been leaked via file sharing site speedyshare.com. Yes, that's a good site for fast file sharing in the format of a compressed file totaling 15 megabytes and uncompressed size of about 20 megabytes. The attack has also left the Korean-based domain hacked with a new page, which at time of publishing had been restored, but an archive can be found. The leaked data is split into 2 folders named which contains .xls files with user credentials from people who have used a web-based resume system for applying for jobs at the Taiwan-based site, as well as volunteer details and old messages database with small amount of entries dated back to 2008. It also contains a 15 megabytes XLS file that has full user credentials in it from the Taiwan-based site and a 5 megabytes file of user credentials from the Austrian-based site. The attack has left usernames, email addresses, and encrypted passwords, as well as other information like gender, location, date of birth, and more. Altogether, there is 226,000 accounts from the Taiwan-based site and 21,000 accounts from the Austrian-based site. So, what do we see here? We see that the system can be fucked. I don't know if I should say this on the air, but, you know, this is my opinion. You know, you can really destroy it if you want. McDonald's has just been pounded here. You know, 3 countries, 3 bases of user credentials, even of the people who got hired years ago. So, there you go. We thank you for the MSG that you put in the food. We thank you for the horrible quality of the food that you sell. And you've just got destroyed, pound, owned, ass raped. Okay. Now, I was talking about other things. Let's see. Yes, look, here is an interesting one about anonymous activist Peretz Brown. This guy, I met him through the IRC anonymous networks, and he was a really good activist, a little bit arrogant, but, you know, it happens. Eventually, he got arrested because he said some stuff about an FBI agent on YouTube. So that was the mistake. You know, he stopped being in his bench, and he got arrested. So this article is about Barrett Brown's mother, who faces prison for hiding evidences. So this is very weird. The mother of alleged anonymous activist Barrett Brown has pleaded guilty to helping her son hide two laptop computers from federal investigators. Well, this Barrett Brown guy, you know, he was responsible for organizing some really good operations for helping humanity. Brown's mother, Karen McCutcheon, pleaded guilty last week to a charge of obstructing the execution of a search warrant. She faces a maximum sentence of 12 months in prison and a $100,000 fine. Sentencing has not yet been scheduled. On March 6, 2012, officers with the Federal Bureau of Investigation raided Brown's Dallas, Texas apartment in an attempt to execute a search warrant for computers that could contain information involving activist group Anonymous and LulzSec. In case you don't know, LulzSec is like the hardcore part of Anonymous. Its job is to do the more nasty and dangerous stuff. The feds hadn't found all the computers they were looking for during a search of Brown's apartment that morning, and Brown, located at his mother's house, refused to volunteer them. Well, of course, he refused. You don't give your stuff like that to the system. Barrett Brown is expected to stand trial in September, at which point he will have spent an entire year behind bars without conviction. The problem of Barrett Brown, you see, is that he is an idiot. He did some good things, yes, but he just wanted to be a little famous. You know, he's the guy who always was the spokesperson for Anonymous at RT News and other news places. He wanted to be known as Barrett Brown, the guy affiliated with Anonymous. You know, instead, he should have just been Anonymous and nothing would have happened. Because you see, the ones that do get arrested are the ones who get conquered by this feeling of wanting to be special, of wanting to get outside of the seriousness and just say, look, it's me. I'm this name and I did that. You know, and that is the point where they fail and they get caught. Very unprofessional. But this Barrett Brown guy did some good things. Okay. World's biggest DDoS attack that almost broke the internet. The last week has seen probably the largest distributed denial of service attack ever. A massive 300 gigabytes per second was thrown against internet blacklist maintainer Sparnhouse website, but the anti-spam organization Cloudflare was able to recover from the attack and get its core services back up and running. Sparnhouse, a group based in both London and Geneva, is a non-profit organization that aims to help email providers filter out spam and other unwanted content. Sparnhouse is pretty resilient, as its own network is distributed across many countries, but the attack was still enough to knock its site offline on March 18. Yeah, so this is sort of a thing did for fun. You know, there are positive hackers, there are negative hackers, there are the ones that are hired to hack by businesses. There are also hackers who just do it for fun. Now, I don't know which is the case here, but to do such a denial of service attack, you need a lot of power. You need loads of botnets. You need
zombies. Five national cyber police forces are investigating the attacks. A group calling itself Stop House, an alliance of activists and cyber criminals, is believed to be responsible for bombarding Spawn House with up to 300 gigabytes. See, this is where I don't really trust them. Because activists are people that, you know, just like activism means to go on the streets to express yourself for a high goal, you know, activist means to hack for a great purpose. And in this case, stopping something that that does not do anything bad to humankind is not a good subject to be a part of. So, yes, cyber criminals, but not hacktivists. Who the cyber criminals are? No idea. The Stop House. Group calling itself Stop House. The attacks on Spawn House illustrates a larger problem with the vulnerability of the systems fundamental to the architecture of the internet. The domain name servers, the high attack bandwidth is made possible because attackers are using misconfigured domain name servers known as open recursive resolvers or open recursors to amplify a much smaller attack into a larger data flow. So this answers some of the questions. Known as DNS reflection, the technique uses a request for a relatively large zone file that appears to be sent from the intended victim's network. According to Cloudflare, it initially recovered over 30,000 DNS resolvers that were tricked into participating in the attack. There are as many as 25 million of these open recursive resolvers at the disposal of the attackers. Now for an interesting one. Human rights activists targeted with a new Android malware. Yes, the Android is not really safe. Nothing is safe and nothing will be safe. Tibetan and Uyghur activists are once again targeted with a new malware, specially designed for Android devices. This is the first documented attack that targets Android smartphones. You see, I don't even have a smartphone, and this is a reason why I don't have it. There are people today who live entirely in their little phones. Do you imagine what that does to the psychology of a human to just watch a little point from your visible spectrum, to just watch at a small point? Not only it destroys your eyes, but also your thinking. You know, if they just focus on one single point for hours and hours and hours, and eventually you focus on that little small point most of the day, your thinking ends up being reshaped, and you don't find solutions for your problems. You just find the obvious one, but nothing really creative. It really destroys creativity and diversity. Okay, back to the article. Security researchers at Kaspersky say they found a targeted malware attack on Android phones that seems to come from China. The attack relied heavily on social engineering, a kind of verbal manipulation to hack into their targets' devices. Malware seeks to steal information like contacts, call logs, and the SMS of people who work in the field of human rights. Kaspersky has identified the Trojan as Chuli, after a command function that shows up prior to posting stolen data to the command and control server at the URL. 647, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So I think this is a case of hired cyber criminals from China to dismantle this activists groups, which are not really that loved by the Chinese system. if you know your history. On March 24, the attackers infiltrated the email account of a high-profile Tibetan activist and used that account to send a spear phishing email to their contacts list. Once the victim opens the attachment on her Android phone, the file installs an application called Conference that will display some information about the Geneva Conference. As the target is reading the message, malicious software they had inadvertently installed would report back to a command and control server before collecting information from the phone. Kaspersky also had a warning for future evolution in attack strategy. End quote. So far, attackers relied entirely on social engineering to infect the targets. History has shown us that in time, these attacks will use zero-day vulnerabilities, exploits, or combination of techniques. All right. So nothing is safe. I suggest you go back to the 2002 phones. You know, they used to be much more safe. You cannot be tracked. You cannot be seen. Well, I guess you can be tracked, but really not much other than that. I have a simple phone, and everything on my computer is with fake information. Do not keep your bank account information on your phone or on your computer. Just use the paper. It's good for you. Yes. And also in this same area, just to scare you a bit more, smartphone cache poses huge risk for cloud storage security. A couple of years ago, the tech world was abuzz about the cloud. Cloud computing refers to computing where the processing or storage takes place on a networked series of computers rather than on the device that you are using. Whether you're using a PC, laptop, tablet, smartphone, television, or video game console, everything now connected to cloud storage and always in sync. But there is a limitation. That smartphones can essentially remember deleted information, which poses a huge risk to organizations that issue smartphones to employees, to organizations that don't explicitly disable the use of personal devices for work-related computing. Yes, well, actually, I don't know about the deleting thing. If you delete something on your computer right now, it will still remain there, you know, even if it doesn't consume your space, it still remains there. You know, you just can't see it. There are programs that you can download so that you can recover the information that you have deleted from recycle bin. Researchers at the University of Glasgow found that cloud storage apps that say they send files to the cloud also leave retrievable versions of files on devices. They tested included box, Dropbox, and Sugar Sync on HTC Desire running Android 2.1 and an iPhone 3S running iOS 3. They found that smartphone devices which access cloud storage services can potentially contain a proxy view of the data stored in a cloud storage service. If the cloud storage application has been used to view the files in the cloud and later user has not attempted to clear the cache for recently viewed files, it can potentially provide a partial view of the data without access to the data provider. As a forensic expert, the recovery of cache data from these devices can, in some scenarios, provide access to further data stored in a cloud storage account. The results from the experiment have shown that it is possible to recover files from the Dropbox, Box, and SugarSync services using smartphone devices, On the HTC Desire, both deleted and available files were recovered. The forensic toolkits recovered 9 files from Dropbox, 15 from Box, and 11 from SugarSync. On the iPhone, depending on application and device manipulation, either 5 or 7 files were recovered from Dropbox, 7 or 15 from SugarSync, and 5 from Box. Also, metadata was recovered from all the applications on both devices. This metadata included transitional logs containing user activity, metadata related to the files in the storage service, and information about the user of the application. The paper also suggests more research is needed because the whole point of cloud storage is access from multiple devices, and security of those devices is therefore very important. So, yes, for those who are living in their feeble little world, they think everything is safe. You know, it's not safe at all. Right. So, we move forward to something very, very destroyed, very, very, very shitty. Because, as we know, you know, when we get to justice, they only arrest the ones who are fighting for a good cause. So, take example, you take a hacker who exposed a pedophile. You know, the pedophile gets 10 years, and the hacker gets 20 years. You know, so now they are talking about even tougher computer crime penalties sought by the US legislators. So it's not about us, the Europeans, but you know, it starts in US, and then it's gonna get applied here too. Right, so legal experts and privacy activists are crying for fall after the House Judiciary Committee began circulating a draft bill that would amend the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act to impose tougher penalties for many types of computer crimes. The 22-page draft cybersecurity legislation is currently being circulated among committee members. A House Judiciary Committee 8 tool told The Hill that the draft is still in its early stages and feedback is still being gathered from multiple stakeholders. But multiple legal and privacy experts have already criticized the proposed changes, with George Washington University professor Orrin Kerr, a former Department of Justice computer crime prosecutor, saying that the bill's revised language appears to have been recycled from legislation proposed by Senator Patrick Leahy in 2011, which he developed with the Department of Justice. "This is a step backward, not a step forward," said Kerr in a blog post analyzing the draft bill. "This is a proposal to give DOG what it wants, not to amend the CFAA in a way that would narrow it." Indeed, the proposed changes would impose together penalties for many types of computer crimes, including making some computer crimes a form of racketeering. In addition, CFAA could be used to punish, and quote, "whoever conspires to commit, as provided for the completed offense," end quote, meaning that someone who discussed committing a computer crime could be charged with having committed the crime. So you actually could get arrested for talking on Skype. Like, say, "I'm gonna hack the White House now," you know, and say that on Skype, and they could arrest you for that if this bill gets approved, or if you talk on Facebook, or what is the difference, what is the stuff that they will take seriously, because most of, like, imagine all those kids who want to be perceived as hackers, they could say some random stuff on the internet. Would that be interpreted as serious threat? You know,
Numerous legal experts have been calling on Congress to amend the CFAA following the death of internet activist Aaron Swartz. He committed suicide while facing up to $1 million in fines and 35 years in prison after he used the Massachusetts Institute of Technology's network to download millions of articles from the JSTOR academic database as part of his quest to promote open access to research that had been funded by the federal government. Ultimately, Swartz issued an apology and returned the files, and GSTOR requested that the civil matter be closed. But using the CFWA, federal prosecutors continue to press charges against Swartz. Wait a minute. So the institution said that they should stop pressing, they stopped pressing charges, and these faggots come and say, oh no, the charges will still go against you. That is the weird and dark side of the system. Seeing a pattern of behavior, meanwhile, critics have slammed the CFWA for being overly broad and enabling Justice Department prosecutors to treat minor crimes as major felonies. And that's right. Like over here in my country, there are some people who vote for these laws and don't even know how to use a computer. You know, they think it's terrorism. They think and it's not their fault really, because these analysts come to them and they say, look, 200 cyber crimes have been done. You know, and when they hear the word cybercrime, they go like, oh. Oh my God, cyber crimes. This must be serious. Let us destroy the cyber terrorists, you know? So that's what happens. It's a lot of confusion, disinformation, and these people end up taking it very, very seriously. The House Judiciary Committee's so-called cybersecurity bill contains a hodgepodge of other recommendations, including in some cases classifying violations of a company's terms of service as being a felony charge. It would give the government greater leeway in pursuing criminal forfeiture and assesses penalties for anyone who intentionally damages critical infrastructure's computers, of which the vast majority are owned, secured, and controlled by private businesses. This is another interesting issue here. Like, private businesses having our information stored in their databases. This is also like for them to do research on us to see what we like or not. You know, they keep all the information there about what we like, what sites we have visited, everything else. But of course, you can bypass that by downloading Adblock, installing a Ghostery plugin, which automatically disables all the third parties. It will also create a federal data breach notification law that would suspend the patchwork of regulations now in effect in virtually every state. The law would require any covered entity that suffered a major security breach involving means of identification pertaining to 10,000 or more people to notify the FBI or a Secret Service within 72 hours and inform affected customers within 14 days, or else risk a fine up to $500,000, which could be raised to $1 million for international violations. This is crazy. This is really, really crazy. So that's what it can drive people crazy. If you, you know, someone has hacked your shit and you become very serious about it and you give him $1 million fine, like in this case of activist Schwartz, you know, it can drive you crazy and you can suicide if you are, you know, weak-minded. Like, if that stuff would happen to me, I would not really care that much, because even in a leash, people, even in a leash inside a small room, you can still be free if you don't accept their trash. Of course, you will get them to a point where they actually kill you for not accepting their trash. But you would die as a free, individual with free thinking, not like some dog who says, "Yes, yes, master, yes, I will pay this. I will stay here in the prison and accept every rule that you impose upon me. I'm your faithful little pet." No, I'm not your faithful little pet, and I will never be. Okay, the draft legislation does propose setting a new threshold for the charge of exceeding authorized access, saying that it would be a crime only if the value of information compromised exceed $5,000. Well, you can easily exceed $5,000, like even the denial of service attack for some company can compromise a lot of that. Like the information compromise can exceed $5,000 easily, because that is how they calculate things. They say, in 5 minutes, the 100,000 people could have joined the site, subscribe to our stuff, and pay monthly. You know, we make a monthly subscription, or make a contract, or buy something, you know. So that's how they calculate stuff. They make these numbers, and then they say, it's your fault, and now we lost $100,000. You have to pay us $1 million now, and you must rot in prison like a homicidal bastard. And again, these crimes, the ones that do get caught are the ones who fight for freedom, who fight for, I don't know, anti-useless advertising, anti-consumerism, anti-Monsanto terrorism, anti-stuff like that. The crime organizations that are funded by some governments to spy upon the other governments. These are not punished at all. Moreover, every big company now has its own hired hackers, so it's to spy upon the other companies. And they also do not get any penalty. You know, the penalty is given to only to the civilian people, which don't have any protection. They don't have any big brother behind them to help them, you know, when they go to the court. Even your own lawyer, he does not really understand what it is about, and he is also corrupt, even if he's defending you. So you end up with all these 18-year-old kids who are fighting for something they believe in. They end up in prison, while the real cyber criminals are out there destroying everything, really. But how much thought has been put into these amendments? Interestingly, the text of the bill says that the Attorney General is authorized to establish the National Cyber Investigative Joint Task Force, which shall be charged with coordinating, integrating, and sharing information related to all domestic cyber threat investigations. In fact, the FBI National Cyber Investigative Joint Task Force, created in 2008 when President Obama established the Comprehensive National Cybersecurity Initiative. Right now you have something like this being created in England, in UK. Not that you don't have one already, but they plan to make like this team of individuals who will spy on everyone, really. And the Prime Minister has actually said that it's going to be comparable to the United States Marine kind of mentality, you know. Which, I don't know, I think it will fail, you know, because as much as you train someone, if they don't have imagination, they will fail. And these people are animals. They are just trained dogs. They can't do anything but bark. While the gorilla, you know, the free gorilla just goes on the trees and travels nicely without getting caught by the dog, which cannot climb the trees. Right. What was I saying? It's already coordinating intelligence and investigation into national cybersecurity infusions across 18 intelligence and law enforcement agencies. A House Judiciary Committee spokeswoman wasn't immediately able to discuss the apparent discrepancy by phone, but the draft bill's outdated language suggests that more than one phase of the cybersecurity bill, including the proposed CFWA amendments, remain at best half-baked. Yeah, because they want to put even more stuff there, to put even more crap. You know, it takes them a long time to do that, because these guys create laws in such a way in which it can deceive the mind very, 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 with a lot of successful, very, my English, not very good English, no speak, I do not speak very good English. Right, so this one was one of the coolest articles, you know, and important as well, because these things don't really get on the news. They're too busy talking on the news about who married who, and football stars. Right. So remember last week I talked about South Korean TVs and banks. This wiped cyber blitz. Yes. And now there is a full story on that, how South Korean bank malware spread. So the malware attacks that successfully compromised an estimated 32,000 South Korean systems Wednesday were distributed, at least in part, using legitimate enterprise patch management software. Attackers used stolen usernames and password to access Achlab patch management software running in at least some of the affected businesses. The credentials, there's a quote, the credentials were used to gain access to individual patch management systems located on the affected networks. End quote. Read the statement released Friday by the Unlab Security Emergency Response Center. Once the attackers had access to the patch management system, they used it to distribute the malware, much like the system distributes new software and software updates, end quote. The resulting malware infections compromised Windows, Unix, and Linux, or Linux, depending on your pronunciations, systems at South Korea's Jeju, Nongkyup, and Shinhan banks, as well as television broadcasters KBS, NBC, and YTN. Well, you know, the way I see it, why they attacked banks and TVs, because the banks are the major criminals of the world right now, and the TVs, you know, the tubes, the mass media is the second evil, the one which imposes the truth on people and shows them how to think and what to read. You know, the news in our news broadcasting, main news broadcasting networks are very slim, very, I don't know, treated from the angle of the corporations, or if they are not treated like that, they are treated from a political spectrum. It just depends on what party controls what. But you will never hear important news. You know, you did not hear anything about the poor Rohingya people getting slaughtered on TV. You know, you did not hear about the government of Barmu financing the terrorists, and they have like little Ku Klux Klan cults there, and they kill people, they slaughter them in 2013. Show something like this in 2000 in the days that we are living, show this on TV,
you know, and people will start to ask questions, and they do not want people to ask questions. Earlier on, I was on a call with my friend Lord Bavon from Belgium, and he sent me a movie from 1989. Many of you may know this movie. It's called The Abyss, and have probably seen it on TV. But what you have not seen are some scenes that in the director's cut, in the special edition, you can see them. And these scenes are very important, you know, because in the movie, the end, you just see it as the guy getting saved by the aliens, and then the aliens take him to the surface from the sea. But what you didn't see is that the aliens created a wave to destroy humanity, and the main character asks why, and the aliens show them on the on that projector created from water a lot of war scenes and the bad things that are happening around the world, a lot of dead folks, images from diverse chaotic wars and crimes, you know, and you know, that was the reason for destroying the world. And this guy says that he sort of understands why the aliens want to kill the world, because we are self-destructing ourselves through these kind of acts, you know. And then of course, he said, "I love you," to his wife in his head, you know. And at that point, you know, the aliens realize that there are little things inside the human world which count. You know, there are things like true love and human emotion, which is really expressed in some areas. You know, that these little things that deserve to live. You know, even if they are obscured by the clouds of evil, you know, but they exist. And whatever, at that point, they sort of released him. They elevated the underwater city, and it was okay. So, but that part got removed. You know why it got removed? Because it would have spread thoughts amongst the people of that time. You know, the thing is, the main dupe, it doesn't want you to start having thoughts like this, to start caring about what's happening in the world, and especially in the United States, you know, where they wanted to make people to enroll, to enlist in the army. And, you know, this kind of scenes would have sensibilized some of the people and make them decide to stay home. All right. So back to the article. The resulting malware infections compromised. Okay. The malicious codes used by attackers included Wiper malware. Okay, so these folks, to get you back on what we were on, you know, these South Korean hackers destroyed the mainstream media, which is one head of evil, and the banks, which is the other head of evil. You know, so it makes perfect sense why it happened at the same time and at that massive scale. The malicious code used by the attackers included the Wiper malware with a built-in logic bomb sent to begin overwriting a computer's master boot record data at the present time Thursday afternoon, and then rebooting, which would render the system inoperable. Some of the Trojan applications used the attacks could also remotely wipe network-connected Unix and Linux systems. All right, so it appears that with the spring current, I am having some allergies. Obviously, I wouldn't want to hear me sneezing on the air, although that would be very funny and interesting. South Korea backpedals after blaming North Korea for bank hack. NLab emphasized that when attackers accessed, you see, just like I told you last time, that I don't believe North Korea for these attacks, you know. They don't have anything to do with this. They probably have other things in mind. All right. Other things more important. This probably has been done by other organizations. AnnLab emphasized that when attackers access its patch management software running a targeted site, they use legitimate access credentials rather than exploiting zero-day vulnerabilities in the code or stealing or compromising any of the digital certificates the company uses to sign its code. Contrary to early reports, no security hole in any AnnLab server or product was used by the attackers to deliver the malicious code, said AnnLab's statement. They also cited the report that Ryuja Kyol, a professor of computer engineering and securities of South Korea's Kangnam National University, said that the North Korean government launched the attack using Chinese-developed code. In fact, Cheol, referencing a Thursday report from the Korean Communications Commission, that the attacks had been launched via an IP address registered in China, told Bloomberg Thursday that discovering that the code was from China makes it more likely that the attack was from North Korea, because a lot of North Korean hackers operate there. Interesting. But, you know, actually, these IP masks, you can't really tell from where the attack was. It's just an IP mask. By Friday, however, South Korean officials changed their story. Nothing that they'd been careless to ascribe to China an IP address that was actually privately registered to South Korea's Nonghyun Bank. According to the KCC, at least some of the malware attacks were launched from a single Nonghyun system inside South Korea itself. Just like I have predicted, many of the systems exploited in the attacks were infected with malware at least one day prior. According to research published by Trend Micro, some of the malware used in the attacks was distributed via a spear phishing campaign that commenced on Tuesday, March 19. But a threat researcher at security firm F-Secure, who goes by the name Broad, said in a blog post Monday that malicious HTML archive used in some of the South Korea attacks was created on March 17, which is 3 days before the logic bomb was triggered. The malicious HTML archive claimed to be an account history for Shinhan Bank customers, which was one of the businesses exploited in the attacks. The malware inside the archive is using double extensions of the businesses exploited in the attacks. Oh shit. Double extensions combined with a very long file name to hide the real extension, said Broad. This is a common social engineering tactic that started during the era of mass mailing worms almost a decade ago. Therefore, we believe that archive is mostly likely sent as attachment in spear phishing emails. End quote. Not all of the malware, however, was launched via spear phishing emails. Quote, some variants also wipe remote systems using credentials found in configuration files of certain SSH clients installed in infected systems. Therefore, an affected system can simply have one of its users who uses a vulnerable SSH client infected for it to go toasted, said Broad. Attackers used software that could not only wipe Windows systems, but also remotely wipe Unix and Linux systems. So, for those of you who thought Linux was secure, it is not secure. Nothing is secure. Like I have been constantly repeating, and I will continue to repeat. Technical difficulties with my nose. Researchers of Symantec reported Friday that they now recovered four different types of wipers used in the attacks. One of the wipers was written as a DLL file that was injected into lsacss.exe, which is the Windows Local Security Authentication Server, while the other three are standalone, position independent, executable. Timing-wise, two of the wipers were included to immediately wipe upon executions, according to a Symantec Security Response blog post. That says, another quote, another was instructed to wipe specifically at 2 p.m. on March 20, 2013. We have recently come across another sample that wipes at 3 p.m. on March 20, independent of year. The post continued. So it's interesting, what is the level of technology that we have to program viruses to start whenever you want them to. You cannot see them because they are in a random DLL file that is not even picked up by any antivirus. That is why antiviruses, once the malicious object has been found, they update the virus signature and they give you the update. But the update that they give you is already out of date compared to the new stuff, the up-to-date viruses that are being invented. In the wake of last week's attacks, some security researchers had suggested that the apparently scattershot list of targets may have been designed solely to cause panic. But researchers have since discovered overlapping malware that's able to wipe multiple systems, backed by redundant logic bomb timing seemingly designed to cause maximum damage. End quote. All the specifics give the impression of a targeted attack. End quote. Said F-Secure's Front Secure's brat. Then the interrupt of the early bird discount on all access and conference passes. This is let's go forward. Anonymous activist launch Operation Vaticano. Data leaked and sites defaced. This is the kind of stuff that I like to read. You know, we all know the recent news that the new Pope has finally been appointed his official position. Well, this has sparked a newly launched operation, dubbed Operation Vaticano, by anonymous activists. You know, they say activists, it's like, you know, it's only one guy, but you know, some use this as a marketing strategy, but some just join the movement and use their talents to join the movement. The activists have been carried out by an account made for this operation, but another leak has come from a group of hackers using the handle Black Cat Steam, who leaked data from the Church of God, which contains database information for site-related stuff as well as six staff accounts details with users' names and email address. The other data leak comes from an unknown search and came in two parts. The first part only contains basic database table and column information, and the second part contains 817 user accounts with users' names and encrypted passwords. The site's device can be seen below, and at the time of publishing, only one site had been restored and all others still defaced. Okay, so the sites are named, I will read them for you, regiomelia.cia.it, fratelli40.it, sheep, Dogitalia.eu. What an interesting name. They don't have the word sheep inside their country, you know, like in the Italian language, but it's here like sheep, sheepdogitalia.it, latorealibri.it. Whatever. The thing is, you know, Vatican is an evil institution, man. So if you go through its history, you know, some of you may be Catholic, but you have to go through the history of Catholicism to see what it really is about, which is controlling people, taking over, you know, supporting and funding evil
evil acts, you know, right? Like right now, they are creating a bank, their own bank, you know, which will be united with the International Monetary Fund and World Bank, you know, World Bank and IMF. And you know what the IMF and World Bank enjoy doing, right? Which is putting countries in debt. You know. So yeah, my show has been ended right now. I didn't even see that because you know, time flies, and yeah, I will start the I will depart now, and thank you for listening to my show. This show will be cut down to pieces, and yeah. See you later. Thanks for listening once more.